From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for September 25th, 2016. Yes, it's the last Sunday in September as this year just keeps rolling along. We've moved into fall, and we're moving ever closer to Election Day. Welcome to our look back at the week in politics, as well as what lies ahead. So it's time to grab that Sunday paper, go get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week started off on a good note. Well, Schwani, I got to tell you, I'm still remembering last Sunday after the show when we headed up to Wrigley.
And well, the question becomes, have you recovered from last Sunday? Question for all concerned.
Well, what? We all had a great time.
We all had a great time, yes.
And it was kind of funny when, you know, when Dean took over at 9 o'clock, and he was joking about Father and Son Day at the ballpark. And then, of course, we get there, and there's Roger Badish. So I
we had three generations.
That's right. Yes, I posted a picture. Three generations of Cub fans at Wrigley. And, yeah, they didn't win. They didn't play all that well.
No, they just really couldn't get anything going. But it was still a great, great afternoon.
Oh, it was a beautiful day at the ballpark. And you know, I think it was kind of like yesterday's game against the Cardinals, where they really couldn't seem to get anything going. And I will at least give the Cubs credit for allowing all of the visiting St. Louis fans an opportunity to think that they're still in the wild card chase.
I think they have their mind on the playoffs right now, you know, angling toward that. And now they have a home field advantage for the playoffs.
Yes, the only real magic numbers now are getting through the postseason.
Mm-hmm. The only magic number is 11.
There you go.
Win it all. 11.
That's right. That's what counts. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. And I mean, we still would like to send the Cardinals back to St. Louis for the winter. And let's go Cubbies. I mean, but yeah, just an absolute great time, Dave. Thanks for taking me, Dad.
You're welcome there, son.
And
nothing like going to see a ball game with
exactly
your kid.
Exactly right.
So if Schwani's dad, Badish is grandpa, right?
Well,
yes,
right.
That's what it is.
It's exactly right. We informed Badish that he had to play the role of grandpa at the event. And it was Schwani, that's a great impression. It almost sounds like Pat Piper. Get your scorecards and pencils ready. Here are today's lineups.
You see where today, where Vin Scully is going to do his final game?
Yeah.
67 seasons.
Amazing.
That is just incredible.
And he is still every bit the storyteller.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he wrote a kind of a farewell letter to fans where he said, I needed you more than you needed me. And
that's going to be a very emotional day today.
Yeah, it would be nice for somebody to carry the national broadcast with him doing the play-by-play. He's just such a sports icon.
I believe if you have the MLB network, you can watch it.
Oh, really?
That would make sense. Yeah.
No more fitting tribute for that. I also saw this stat, I think, It was 50 years ago today, Ken Holtzman beat Sandy Koufax 2-1 at Wrigley Field and then returned to the University of Illinois as a full-time student. How about that for some obscure Cubs trivia there?
How many years ago?
I think it was 50 years.
50?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, September 25th, 1966 at Wrigley.
There you go. And Sam, of course, you have to read that because
he wasn't here.
You weren't around.
No, I was there. I was there in spirit.
1966. You were there in spirit,
yeah.
Huh?
Nice try. Nice try, Sonny.
When they won that game, the Cubs were 58-99, which is almost, if you flip the wins and losses around.
That's right, yeah.
The Cubs right now are 98-56 this season.
And how many games do we have left?
Eight.
Okay. So we should get to the century mark.
Unless some catastrophic happenings
failure
take place.
Happens, yeah.
Don't do that. Don't do that. And you noticed how we've gone this far without mentioning the event tonight.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Your forte, as it were.
No, I was talking about the Bears.
Oh, the Bears. Oh, I thought you were going to talk about your other event that you're very much
looking forward
to. Oh, we
will. Oh,
no,
yes. Well, and today is the final day of the great Chicago Gourmet Festival. And it's just such a terrific time. It's one of the great festivals in the city. And all kinds of food, all kinds of chefs. It's a great, and I hope the weather holds. I mean, I get concerned about, you know, this talk of rain in the afternoon, because I think it goes till 4.
Well, take heart. It also says partly sunny in addition to the showers and thunderstorms. So
we'll take the partly sunny. You can have the showers and thunderstorms. Well, yeah, because I think there's this cold front moving in. The high tomorrow is only supposed to be like mid-60s.
Yeah, 65 to 67.
Time to,
and that, relatively speaking, would be a cold front since we're now into fall.
Yeah, and as I said, this is the last Sunday of September. When we meet again next week, it will be in October. And like I said, ever closer to the election time. And, of course, we have the Super Bowl of all debates coming up tomorrow night. And, I mean, they're talking about 80 to 100 million people watching this, and it's commercial free. But can you imagine an audience that size? I mean, that's like rivaling the finale of MASH.
The finale of MASH. I think the series Roots that was out commanded one of the largest audiences of all time. Yeah, it's up in that category.
Did you say 100 million?
Yes.
Yeah, 100 million.
How many people will hate watch it out of 100 million? What do you think?
Oh, well, there's one of the reasons why you'd have those high numbers.
It's a good amount that will hate watch.
Sure.
Or they'll find a drinking game every time Trump says great or huge or something.
Or
like
number
that.
One.
You're number one, right?
I mean, or how about I gotta tell you?
But yeah, apparently, you know, eight out of 10 people say they plan on watching this, at least portions of the debate tomorrow night. So, and we'll be
interesting to see the numbers Tuesday morning.
Yeah, and see if it really changed anybody's mind.
Yeah, exactly.
And already some of the polling, pre-debate polling, has I think 45% or so say they expect Hillary will win the debate, and 35% say they expect Trump to win the debate. But yeah, that'll be one great time. I mean, it sounds perfect for, you know, making barbecue and or popcorn or something.
Well, you can take the lessons that you learn from the gourmet
yes,
event.
Yes, from the great chefs,
from
yes.
The great chefs, and go to work then on
The real question is whether I'll have the stomach to eat anything after watching
the debate. Yeah,
exactly. Well, Dave's here to keep us up on all the news. Sam's here with the latest sports. Producer Jasmine is here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter @SundaySpin. And Engineer Bob is, actually, he's outside Millennium Park right now hoping for some gourmet leftovers. Now, remember, you can find all our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast, too, at iTunes. Just search for my name, Rick Pearson. We've got a great show today. After Dave's 7:30 news update, we'll speak to my very good friend Dan McGrath. Dan is the president out at Leo High School, and we'll talk about some things going on at Leo, plus get his take on how to keep youth motivated at this time of great strife in Chicago. Dave will be back with the news at the top of the hour. And then we'll talk to Brad Cole. And Brad is the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. The group's having its annual conference here in Chicago. And we'll talk about some issues of concern to mayors as well as the taxpayers. And then after the 8:30 news update, another good friend of mine, Jason DeSanto, will be joining the show. He's a senior lecturer at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law. And Jason knows the power of political rhetoric. And we'll talk to him about things we might want to look forward to in tomorrow night's big, big debate. That's all coming up, but right now it's time for a break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, 7:21 on this Sunday morning, and it's time for our weekly spin through national politics. We have a new ABC Washington Post poll that's out of likely voters, and here you go. Clinton 46, Trump 44, within the margin of error. Gary Johnson with 5, Jill Stein with 1. And the poll also shows that 81% of Obama voters in 2012, 81% of them are for Clinton. 91% of Romney 2012 voters are supporting Trump. Also some questions about an enthusiasm gap as well for Hillary Clinton. So that's the latest in the polling. Of course, we had another wild ride in the presidential sweepstakes as we head towards that very first debate between Trump and Clinton tomorrow night. Responding to the violence in Charlotte and the protests, Trump said he thought the police use of the controversial and unconstitutional stop and frisk tactic was useful. Then he told Fox News, he only meant it for Chicago.
New York was not in a Chicago situation, but it was really in trouble. It was in bad shape crime-wise, and with all of the shootings and everything. And Rudy Giuliani did a great job as mayor. And they really straightened things out with stop and frisk, and it was used further by the next mayor, Bloomberg. And now they just, you know, recently, not so recently, but fairly recently, they stopped it. But stop and frisk worked. We had tremendous numbers of shootings. Now, Chicago is out of control. And I was really referring to Chicago with stop and frisk. They asked me about Chicago, and I was talking about stop and frisk for Chicago, and where you had 3,000 shootings so far this year, 3,000 from January 1st. And obviously, you can't let the system go the way it's going, but I suggested stop and frisk. And some people think that's a great idea, and some people probably don't like it. But when you have 3,000 people shot and so many people dying, I mean, it's worse than some of the places we're hearing about, like Afghanistan, you know, the war-torn nations. I mean, it's more dangerous.
Worse than Afghanistan, according to Donald Trump. Well, just so you know, there is documented evidence that the stop and frisk tactic used in New York didn't necessarily lead to lower incidents of crime. Crime rate in New York was already falling when it was implemented, and crime didn't spike up in New York when it ended. Now, at the same time, Trump continued his outreach efforts towards African Americans, and in one speech, he likened himself to the Great Emancipator.
Becoming the nominee of the party of Abraham Lincoln has been the greatest honor of my life. It's on his legacy that I hope to build the future of our party. I believe we need a civil rights agenda for our time, one that ensures the right to a good education and the right to live in safety and in peace. It also means the right, so true, so unsafe. When you see people being shot in the streets, walking to a store with their child, oftentimes their child being shot for no reason whatsoever.
Now, Trump's hoping to take advantage of a perceived softness in support among African-American voters for Clinton, particularly since Barack Obama is no longer on the ballot. But he's also playing his America First card. And in a new ad, which now is going to be ramped up by what's being talked about as a huge, advertising buy as we start going into these final weeks. This is the new ad.
It's a movement, not a campaign. Its leader, Donald Trump, builder, businessman, success, doing what others called impossible. Donald Trump's priority, you. Dreaming big, building bigger, united for family, jobs, country, defined by freedom. Standing together, pushing ahead, leaving the past behind, changing our future. Together, we'll make America great again.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Now, Hillary Clinton wasn't quite as active this week doing her debate prep, but she launched a new ad in which she touted the immigration issue in several swing states.
We are going to triple the number of ICE deportation offices.
Donald Trump's plan, tear families apart. Hillary Clinton, she's made protecting children and families her life's work. She began her career defending children with disabilities. As First Lady, she helped extend health care to 8 million children. And now fighting for immigration reform that keeps families together.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
We'll have more on our national spin through politics, including the ad wars starting to heat up. Right now, though, it's time for a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. My friend Les downstate wanted to remind me that in talking about baseball, I didn't mention the final score of the Cubs game yesterday, which, of course, the Cubs lost 10-4. But that, I think, is kind of appropriate. I think 10-4.
10-4.
Goodbye. Goodbye, St. Louis.
10-4.
10-4. You're out of here. Well, up ahead on the Sunday Spin, my good friend Dan McGrath, president of Leo High School, will talk about some things going on at Leo, and we'll probably work in a little bit of discussion about the Cubs and not much discussion of the Bears. I promise you that much. Right.
Get Chicago news first at the top of every hour. I'm Dave Schwann on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Dave, I guess you have an update as well on the shooting in Champaign.
Yes, we have received word now. As we mentioned, five people in all injured during this incident overnight. The city of Champaign and Champaign police report that one person has died as a result of those injuries. So we have one fatality in this incident, four people injured. One of those injured was hit by a vehicle that the person was running from the scene where these shootings took place on East Green Street.
But I lived a block away from there in college.
Did you really?
Yeah, 3rd and Green. I lived at 3rd and Healy.
That seems to be a popular area there. Can you tell us a little bit what it's like there, Sam?
So it's on campus. Champaign-Urbana, it's a split campus between the two cities. That's the heart. Green Street is the heart of University of
Illinois.
That's
what I understand, yeah.
And 6th and Green is where the Quad is. So this is just three blocks away from where you have thousands and thousands of people crossing through every day. This is literally right in the heart of the campus of U of I.
And no doubt a very popular spot on Saturday night.
Sure. Yeah. There's a bar right there on 3rd and Green.
Okay.
A couple of them. Mm-hmm. So this is probably right outside one of the establishments in Champaign.
All right. Well, Dave, keep us updated and just break in anytime you get any more news, because obviously we all either know somebody, know a student, or have a great love for the University of Illinois.
Yes, indeed. Will do, Rick.
We're going to go back to our spin through national politics. I was talking about how Hillary Clinton so far has really been winning on the ad wars, but there still are these questions. You look at these poll numbers, what does she have to show for it? She's got another new ad that she's running in which features a disabled woman who accuses Trump of running a campaign of hate.
I first met Hillary Clinton when I was 9 years old, and I could tell that when she looked at me, she didn't see disability. She saw someone strong and capable, like I see myself. Donald Trump doesn't see people like me. He just sees disability. I honestly feel bad for someone with so much hate in his heart. We need a president who sees the best in all of us.
That's another new ad from Hillary Clinton. And just remember, we're just getting into October, so you're going to see a lot more of these TV ads ramping up. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studios, my good friend, Dan McGrath. And Dan is the president of Leo High School and probably one of the busiest guys I know. Used to think working on a newspaper was busy.
A different sort of busy. But no, similarly, I don't want to say consuming because, you know, I'm there by choice.
Well, and you enjoy it.
I do. It's I can't believe I'm in my seventh year already.
Well, let's just say I see you smiling a lot more than necessarily I may have seen you smiling around the paper.
I smiled a lot at the Tribune until I met Randy Michaels and Lee, what's his name, that crew. But, you know, I look back on it, and if that hadn't happened, Leo probably wouldn't have happened. And, you know, I thought at the time, this is something I've been called to do. And I am six years later. I'm in my seventh year. And I still enjoy it every day. It's very stimulating work. It's very compelling work. And I see the results we achieve with our young guys, and it's very satisfying work. And at this stage of my life, you can't ask for much more than that.
That, and, you know, I've found with my friends who are teaching, like, on college campuses and that kind of thing, it's just there's something about youth that just invigorates you.
Yeah, you know? I was telling you before we went on the air, Rick. Oh, thanks for having me, by the way. I really appreciate this. Every time I'm on the show, I hear from people. A lot of it is, what do you know about running a school? And in truth, not very much. But they do, you know, they do make a connection, and I really appreciate that. We played host to the U.S. Military Academy West Point boxing team. They were in Chicago for an amateur card at the Italian-American Sports Hall of Fame. And Mike Joyce, a great Leo man who's the coordinator of our boxing program, brought them by school, and they did a clinic not only for our kids but for neighborhood kids. And in addition to, you know, giving some boxing pointers, they just talked about their personal stories and what drew them to the military and what they hope to achieve. And one young man in particular grew up in New Orleans and experienced Katrina and was shuttled all over the country trying to find, you know, suitable housing, and just an unbelievable story. And, you know, sometimes we think, oh, we've been through a lot. And then you hear a story like this, and the fact that he was able to, you know, keep himself together, put his life together, and go on to the U.S. Military Academy is a very impressive story. And just talking to these young guys, being around these young guys, maybe the future of this country isn't as bad as we sometimes fear, because they're really impressive young guys. And it was great for our guys to be exposed to them, because, you know, our guys are strivers too. They want to achieve things. And so meeting guys like this is a reminder that, you know, there are things out there that you can do, that you can aspire to. And that's part of what we, you know, part of our mission is to convey that.
Well, and your students are strivers. They want to achieve.
Right.
And, you know, I particularly wanted to have you on to talk about, you know, given all of the strife that we have in Chicago about, you know, keeping kids motivated, keeping them, you know, looking forward, keeping them active.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a monumental task.
It is, but it's also absolutely necessary. You know, you drive through pockets of the South Side and the West Side, and there's just nothing there. There's no jobs. There's no commerce. There's nothing. And if you grow up in that environment, you know, what do you aspire to? So the kids we get, we just try to show them that there's a world out there, and, you know, there are things that you can do no matter what your circumstances are. And another thing, one of the really unfortunate, I mean, the violence that's plaguing our city is just bad on so many levels. But one of the really unfortunate side effects is that it's demonizing an entire generation of young African-American males. People see young black guys on the street, and they're like, oh, there's this reaction that, oh, there's trouble. And it's a relative handful of, you know, these gangbangers who are shooting each other up. They're responsible. But at the same time, it demonizes an entire generation. And that is so unfortunate. We were at a peace rally up on the north side during the summer. Our Lady of Mount Carmel Parish, it's not exactly a ghetto parish, but they wanted to do this to call attention to the problem. It was called Put Down the Guns, Make the Peace. And the tone of the speeches, Father Flager was there, Father Dave Kelly from Precious Blood Ministries was there, and the tone of the speeches was rather somber. So they wanted some uplifting music to kind of balance things out. And our choir is phenomenal, talented, you know.
Yes, they are.
Really good young men. And the message that both Father Kelly and Father Flager conveyed was that, you know, this demonization is really unfortunate. And then our guys stuck around after they performed and mingled with the guests. And for a lot of these people, they probably don't interact with young African-American males. So this was an opportunity to do so and to just see what solid, respectful, responsible young guys they were. It was really, really nice on both sides. It kind of reinforced the message that the priests had delivered that, hey, we're not all like that. And, you know, for our guys, they experienced some type of people they don't often see, and the guests at the rally were exposed to some young African-American males who defy that stereotype, who are really good young guys out there doing a lot of good things.
But do your guys, you know, understand that demonization fact?
Oh, they do. There's no question they do. We had a same topic almost. We were at a Big Shoulders event, and I had three or four of our top guys with me to... We are a Big Shoulder school. They give us a lot of support, and we're very grateful for that. So whenever they ask for our participation in a Big Shoulders event, we're happy to do it. And we were at an event downtown, and I think I had three guys with me, and they spoke and they mingled with the younger, the auxiliary board of Big Shoulders. Those are the younger volunteer types who do a lot. And after we left, we were walking into the parking garage, and the doors opened, and there were two probably late 30s, early 40s women already on the elevator. And when we got on, I just kind of noticed how they pulled their bundles a little tighter and, you know, braced. And, you know, yeah. I don't know if the kids noticed it, but I certainly did. And, you know, you put yourself in that position, and it'd be hard to grow up like that, you know,
right,
knowing that you instill fear in people. And it's really pretty groundless, but, you know, it's the way it is. So we our guys are the best ambassadors we have. So we try to get them out there, get them exposed to as many different situations as we can, but also get them to realize that there is life beyond the neighborhood. You know, there's things they can do. There's things they can aspire to and, you know, go on and have a nice life. And Leo is like the first step toward that. And we take that responsibility very seriously.
This is my good friend Dan McGrath. He's the president of Leo High School. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue on this beautiful Sunday morning. Joining me here is Dan McGrath, my good friend, president of Leo High School. Dan, you've got a lot of things actually going on at Leo.
We do, Rick. We're celebrating our 90th year. We opened the doors in 1926, so this is our 90th year, 90 years in the same location. Not a lot of Chicago institutions can make that claim, but we make it very, very proudly. You know, as I say, you drive around the neighborhood and a lot of residents, a lot of businesses, even a lot of churches abandoned Auburn Gresham, but we stayed right where we are and continue to do what we do, which is educate young men and get them ready for life, and we're very proud of that. We're going to have
and
a little
it's a
party.
Grounding for the neighborhood.
Oh, no doubt. We redid the main parking lot had become just an eyesore. It was all chewed up, and tried for years to get it fixed, and the good folks that began paving made us an offer we couldn't refuse, so it's been fixed. And not only is it blacktop, but the striping on the parking spaces is orange, so it's orange and black.
True Leo.
True Leo. But Ed Began, one of the founders of Began Paving, was a Leo grad, very proud, and his daughter, Ann Began Wilson, was behind this, and we're extremely grateful to them because it just spruces up the entire block, actually the entire neighborhood. And when it rained, we'd get about 3 inches of water in Lake Leo. And I miss that little breeze off Lake Leo we used to get. But it's just a tremendous, we look better, we're more efficient, and people pulling in to park there get a much better opinion or, you know, impression of the school. So it was very important. We're very grateful for that. That's part of the 90th. On November 29th, we're going to have a 90th anniversary scholarship benefit. And Mr. Andy McKenna, a great Chicagoan and a great Leo man, has agreed to be honored as a Lifetime Achievement Award recipient. So we're really looking forward to that.
Which he doesn't like that kind of attention.
No, he doesn't. He could probably get a plaque from somebody every single night because he's involved. No, he's involved in so many things, and he has contributed to so many things. So not only are we honoring him, but we're very honored that he's agreed to be honored because, you know, this is he's one of those people. But Leo is very close to his heart. You know, like most of us, he feels that it helped him get off to a good start in life, and he certainly made the most of his life. So it's a great opportunity to be able to call attention to all the things that he's done and also celebrate our 90th year. So we're
looking
forward to that.
And you also have a new principal at the school.
I cannot speak another word without mentioning Mr. Shaka Rawls. He's a 1993 Leo grad, a young fellow with just boundless energy and enthusiasm. He's just enlivened the whole building, energized the faculty, energized the kids and their parents. I have to say our enrollment is up more than 20% from last year, from what we finished the 2015-16 school year with to what we began this year with. We're up over 20%, which is phenomenal. Because in the Catholic schools, if you're not losing, you're gaining. And we are legitimately gaining. So a lot of that I attribute to the Shaka Rawls effect. He's just a really dynamic guy. He's from the area. He knows the neighborhood. He knows the kids. And he just relates to them extremely well. I've been trying to get him in the building since I started. And we finally had the right opportunity to do it. And it's paid off greatly. He's a wonderful young guy.
Where can people learn more about Leo?
Our website, www.leohighschool.org, or they can just call. If they want to stop by and, you know, come for a visit, we love to entertain. But we do open houses. You mentioned the neighborhood and the energy. We stayed open all summer. A lot of it was organized. We had summer camps. We had summer school. We had sports camps. But the main thing was we just wanted our kids to have a place to go. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, I'd come back in the fall and I'd say, "Hey, Jamal, how was your summer?" "Oh, Mr. McGrath, I didn't do anything. My neighborhood's too crazy." And, you know, teenage boys can't live like that. So we're open. You know, the gym is open. The library's open. Teachers are around. You just, if you want to come up and read a book or shoot hoops or something, there's availability to do that. And we just want them to have somewhere to go in the summer. So when they come back, they didn't spend the entire summer cooped up in their homes because they're afraid to go outside. That's a very sad statement on what's going on in our city, that, you know, young people in the prime of their lives are afraid to go outside. So we try to combat that in any way we can.
Well, I can't let you leave without turning attention to the sports page. And, I mean, these Cubs are just phenomenal.
Oh, how are they doing? I haven't.
I knew you were going to do that.
It's phenomenal. They are a really good team. Maybe the best in my lifetime. I was out there Friday. I was trying to choose between Bryant and Rizzo for MVP. Rizzo gets three. Or not Friday. One of the Reds games. The night I was out there, Rizzo got three hits, drove in two runs. Bryant got two hits, drove in a run, and made a spectacular catch in left field. So the star quality of these young guys is just, I've never seen a team bring that much talent to the big leagues in such a short period of time. I mean, they're all really, and they play the game so well. They had a 3-4-5 double play against the Cardinals on Friday. They turned a sacrifice bunt into a double play. And then Fowler goes first to third on this little bleeder single to left field. And then from third, he scores on a wild pitch. First run of a game they really wanted to win. They play baseball. They really know how to play baseball. And they've got a lot of talent. And I don't know who's going to beat them. I mean, Boston's hot right now.
Right.
And of course, you have to get to the World Series before you see Boston. And Lord knows the problems they've had getting to the World Series. But I look at the National League, and I don't know who beats them.
Dan, I was looking this up.
I think it's going to happen.
The other day, I don't think there's been a team in Major League history that's had a 1-2 combo, both in the MVP, like you mentioned, with Rizzo and Bryant, also in the Cy Young with Hendricks and Lester. That's never happened before where they've had a team finish 1-2 in MVP and in Cy Young, and that could certainly happen with the Cubs.
The 1-2 combo for MVP and the Cy Young.
Right,
is
both.
Just,
it's never happened before.
Never happened before.
Usually it's one guy. Like Willie Hernandez was MVP and Cy Young. Dennis Eckersley was MVP and Cy Young. Vita Blue, I think, was MVP and Cy Young. So it's almost unheard of. You know, there's Nolan Arenado from Colorado's having a great year. Daniel Murphy's having a great year. We sort of assume that it's going to be Bryant or Rizzo, and I suppose there's a possibility they could divide the vote and somebody else would sneak in.
Now that would be typical Cub
that would
fashion.
That's the typical Cub fatalist attitude. But boy, the two of them they're just phenomenal players, and they're likable guys too.
Well, and I think it's a testament, even despite the outcome of yesterday's game. Yeah. But no one left.
No, of course not. No, because, you know, everybody wants to sing the song. Everybody wants to see the blue flag fly, and everybody wants in on it. But it's good. I mean, I remember 05 when the White Sox won. I covered three of the Bulls championships. I was involved in 5 49ers Super Bowls. Final Fours and U.S. Opens. And I've covered a lot because I've been around a long time. But that White Sox World Series, that was the most fun story I've ever been involved with, mostly because I know what it meant to people. You know, I grew up on the South Side, and I knew what that meant to people. And Sox fans aren't going to like this, but if it's the Cubs, you multiply it by 10 just because of the interest that they command. So if it happens, it's going to be phenomenal.
But I'm not going to get ahead of that.
No, of course. That's the suspense. You know, they won the division by so much. They've been in first place by so much that you sort of had to manufacture suspense about the division. But now, you know, the playoffs is a whole other story.
Right, so, yeah, exactly. We'll see.
You know, I was around in 2003, and I was around in... You may remember this, Rick. We did a book in 2008 saying this is the year, and we may not want to get ahead of ourselves here, but, you know... We were
overruled.
We were into other things, Ben.
Yes, indeed. Well, that's Dan McGrath, my good friend, president of Leo High School, and you can read him in the sports pages of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Periodically.
And good luck to the school year here at Leo.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks again for having me. We like to get the word out as best we can, and this always helps, and I'm very appreciative.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Brad Cole. He's the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Sad news out of Miami, the death of the Marlins' 24-year-old star pitcher in a boating accident. We're also following the shooting incident in off campus at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. The Daily Illini there has a police source confirming that there were students injured in that shooting. The police are saying it's not a good thing. We'll keep you updated on that story as well. Well, during last Sunday's news shows, John Dickerson on Face the Nation had an interesting interview with Reince Priebus, the Republican national chairman. And Priebus warned of potential penalties against Republican candidates for president who end up not endorsing the nominee.
People who agreed to support the nominee that took part in our process, they used tools from the RNC. They agreed to support the nominee. They took part in our process. We're a private party. We're not a public entity. Mm-hmm. Those people need to get on board. And if they're thinking they're going to run again someday, I think that we're going to reevaluate the process of the nomination process, and I don't think it's going to be that easy for them.
Would the party itself penalize somebody who does not make good on the pledge that they made to support the party's
nominee?
I think
these are things that our party is going to look at in the process. And I think that people who gave us their word used information from the RNC should be on board.
That's RNC Chairman Reince Priebus. Well, we saw on Friday that if there were any penalties, they wouldn't apply to Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Cruz, who once called Trump amoral. Cruz, who saw Trump criticize his wife and his father for allegedly being part of a conspiracy to kill JFK. Well, Cruz now says he's voting for Donald Trump. Ohio Governor John Kasich, another former Trump rival, isn't planning on voting for Trump, but he says he will help the GOP vote get out in his pivotal state of Ohio, even if it helps Trump.
This vaunted Kasich machine, okay, that's not how you win elections. I mean, we're going to go and help people to get the vote out, obviously.
For
Donald
Trump?
And Senator, get Republicans out to vote, period. But I don't first of all, control any machine.
That's Ohio Governor John Kasich. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Brad Cole. Brad's executive director of the Illinois Municipal League, and the IML just wrapped up its annual conference in Chicago. And Brad, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Good morning.
I know you guys had a big conference, and for the opening keynoter, you had this guy, what's his name, Jim Edgar was there. Right. And you were recounting me off the air about what he talked about the budget.
Yeah. Of course, yes, this was our 103rd annual conference, and we're glad to be back in Chicago for it. A couple thousand elected
officials. We're glad to have you, as always.
Thank you. But Governor Edgar did come and was our keynote speaker opening session, and recounted that, well, first, he's been out of office 17 years. He said, just glad somebody calls now, of course, and did a great job, and our audience really appreciated his comments talking about the issues as he sees them, having sat in the governor's chair. But at one point, he did make reference to, he was kind of explaining the budgetary process and indicated that back in 1994, whenever it was, that they were 20 days past having a budget.
And the calamity that ensued.
And oh, how terrible that was. And of course, about everybody said, we'll take that. So, yeah, it's interesting to see the difference in the times and where we're at now.
You know, I have to imagine for municipal managers, for mayors, village presidents, that in many respects they're like business people, that it's a prospect of just certainty.
Well, certainty is absolutely right. And, you know, like Warren Harding said, we kind of need a return to normalcy also. The issue for mayors and managers and finance officers, treasurers, clerks, elected, you know, aldermen, whatever it may be, is they're just not sure where things are going to end up. Now, this year in the stopgap budget, we were very fortunate, and we appreciated the support of the leaders, both legislatively and the governor, to receive all of our pass-through funds. Last year, we had to wait to December, but issues like motor fuel tax, you know, and video and casino gaming, and our local share of state income tax, those, you know, could be held up at some point. And municipalities, they don't have a choice in the process. They have to have a balanced budget. They have to have it on time. Many are on a May 1 to April 30 fiscal year. Some are on a January calendar fiscal year. And so they don't have a choice in the process. And that's where the certainty causes a lot of anxiety, not having it, because they've got to have a balanced budget. And they report to the people that they see on the street every day at the post office, the grocery store, the dry cleaners, or at work.
Well, and we talked about this in the past, too, that without that certainty, I mean, how do you even do a tax levy? You know, how
right.
do you figure a budget when
right.
you don't know what money you're going to have available?
You don't know what you're going to need. You also don't know what you're going to have to make up for from other folks who, in particular on social services, are not seeing the resources that they saw. So a lot of things are falling back on the city's towns and villages. And, of course, City Hall is open. You know, we've got to provide for the health, safety, and welfare. The police and fire trucks have to roll. The planning services have to be there. Public information has to be available. So it's been interesting, but I think we have shown through our mayors and aldermen and women that you know, the work can get done and has been done without any hiccups, even though there's a lot of uncertainty and anxiety.
Well, on that uncertainty and anxiety, we know about the Springfield part of it. What about as far as the national level?
Well, I did have a new member of relatively new member of Congress in the last year who said, you know, the feds are actually make the state look pretty good. So,
which is a sad reflection.
Yeah. And so, you know, unfortunately, it's an issue on both sides, and trying to get a budget through and continuing resolutions through the Congress. And, you know, I think it speaks to a lot of the political overtones that we saw in a recent Pew study, just came out last week, that more people are satisfied with and have confidence in their local government than either their state or their national government. And that's because we get the job done. Not to say that the others don't, but it's a lot more
Well, it's first
difficult.
Person.
Yeah.
And plus, it's first person.
Right.
I
yeah.
mean, that's, I was telling somebody the other day about, I was talking to Springfield radio station. They were kind of asking me about political ramifications of things in Chicago. And I said, well, you know, downstate, you know, people know their mayor, they know their state representative, they know their state senator. I mean, they're kind of frontline people versus necessarily up here in Chicago where, you know, people know their alderman before they know who their state representative or state senator is. A friend of mine once asked me, he had a problem with railroad retirement funding, which is a federal issue.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, did you talk to your congressman? And they said, oh, yeah, I called Pate Phillip. Well, yeah. Pate Phillip was the state senator, not the congressman. So, you know.
Yeah, and I know when I was in office, when I was Mayor Carbondale, people would come in and he would get some of these odd questions, and I'd say, well, you know, why are you asking me for that? I'm glad to help, but, you know, why are you asking me? Well, I knew I could get in and talk to you, and I knew, you know, you could figure it out from here. So local elected officials serve that role, and we see that the people recognize that and have an appreciation for it. But it's been interesting.
And it highlights the role of constituent service.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The bread and butter of politics.
That's right. Politics is local.
Yes, indeed. We're speaking with Brad Cole. He's the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Brad Cole, the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. And we're just catching up on some downstate geography questions. But, Brad, I had this question about, and I had one of the supporters of this constitutional amendment proposal that will be on the November 8th ballot, the lockbox for transportation funding proposal. And, you know, there's, quote, no real organized opposition to it. And as they point out, well, it's just common sense because money earmarked for transportation through the gas tax and that kind of thing should go to transportation. And I'm kind of curious, given kind of the where you guys fell between the safety nets on municipal funding, why wouldn't municipalities want some kind of lockbox protection like that?
Well, I think municipalities in general, and our board has not taken any action, so I can't say on behalf of the organization, but I think municipalities and local elected officials absolutely want transportation money to be spent on transportation projects with regard to state funding. And, you know, I think there are some questions about this that relate to how does it impact local funds, local gas taxes. But, you know, I think the state should spend transportation funds on transportation projects. And I think mayors and council members would agree with that. You know, it's interesting that there has to be a constitutional amendment on this issue, you know, and why the General Assembly can't just do that. You know, why does it take a constitutional amendment to do that? Are we going to be getting into an era where we have, like California, a lot of propositions and constitutional amendment questions?
For specific
things, you know. And so I think it's an intriguing dialogue that's had out there. I do believe the Civic Federation might have taken an opposing vote just this week on it, but there has not been a lot of opposition organized or otherwise.
Well, I just think go back to, you know, the problems where you guys weren't getting your pass through money,
right?
And you know that was impacting things like salt for winter and
clearing roads and of course projects, because you know, you have to plan, you have to put these things out to bid, you have to know how much money you're going to have. And so there were quite a few projects last year that were delayed, construction projects, because the local funds were being withheld, even though they were passed through. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's a sensitive topic when it gets down to away from the state funds and down into local funds. So what is the protection for local officials to be able to make the determination on where those local dollars can be spent?
Well, and let's face it, you guys have had to play a little bit of defense here for quite some time, given the state's budget uncertainty,
right. The
whole issue of the local government distributive fund, which that's the bureaucratic speak for the share of income taxes that go to local governments,
right. Which,
as the state finds its ever-deepening red ink, that people talk about all the time about, well, maybe we could tap into the local share of funds, which in a roundabout way, that, of course, would take money away from municipalities. And at the same time in Springfield, they're talking about, and let's freeze property taxes.
Right. And, of course, we are opposed to a permanent freeze on property tax for municipalities because a lot of those funds go to one of our favorite topics, pensions. Pension contributions, and municipalities have a very small share of property tax, maybe between 6, 7, 8, 9% of the share. A lot of it goes to schools.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's a lot of concern for let's lock down this funding, transportation. We're fine with that if it's state dollars. How is it going to impact local dollars? Then have a property tax freeze, which only affects local governments because the state doesn't have a property tax, so it doesn't affect them at all. And then what's the pass-through process, and is there any holdup for the dollars that the state is collecting for us but that are levied locally? So that's where it gets complicated, and that's where mayors and aldermen and women are concerned because they got to pass that balanced budget every year.
Well, and, I mean, let's face it, everybody hates property taxes. We all know that. But at the same time, I find this kind of a conundrum of a lot of people who support a property tax freeze are the ones who also believe in local control.
Yes, and that's who decides the property taxes is the local officials. You know, it's at the local level. So if the property owners don't want it, they have a venue where they can go down to the school board or the park board or the city hall and city council and express themselves. And if the council decides to pass something, then they've had their say. But a lot of times there is support for those things, local control. But in this case, it people do complain about property taxes. There's no doubt about it. Nobody really wants to pay more than they should. Or
nobody
more
wants
than,
to pay 1 cent of
right,
property taxes.
Right. But it is a local decision. Now, you know, we proposed this last year in the last legislative session, a constitutional amendment. Also, it didn't get any support, didn't get heard. We did have a hearing on it, but to expand the eligibility for home rule status. Right now, in the 70 Constitution, communities 25,000 and above population are automatically home rule. Well, the state also has a lot of regulations that affect communities 5,000 population and above. So we suggested let's lower that threshold to allow more local decision making to offset some of the unfunded mandates, to be able to counter some of the uncertainty so that you can have more control. It's not all about revenue generation. Sometimes it's about regulation or just general management or working in intergovernmental cooperations with other communities. So there are some things out there, and you know, maybe this will be an issue. We're definitely going to bring this issue back up on home rule eligibility, but maybe there will be more of these issues coming forward based on this lockbox initiative this year.
There's always the law of unintended consequences.
Yes, and this is likely to have some consequences that we'll have to sort out down the road.
Brad Cole, Executive Director of the Illinois Municipal League, thank you so much for joining
thank
me this
you, Rick.
Morning. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, my good friend Jason DeSanto, senior lecturer at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. Just a reminder, I have a lot of friends that are putting on a fundraiser for Baton Rouge Flood Relief that's helping out not only the Tarowski family, who actually had to leave their home by boat. Unbelievable situation there. It's to help them and also to help the Baton Rouge Area Foundation as well. The fundraiser is going to be Thursday, September 29th, this Thursday, 6 to 8 o'clock, and that's at McGee's Tavern, 950 West Webster in Chicago. You can learn more about this event, and we'd encourage you to come out. There'll be all kinds of things for a silent auction, lots of very cool things to bid on. You can get more information about the event at www.gofundme.com/Eileen Taylor. So if you can help out, it'd be greatly appreciated. Last week, of course, was the Emmy Awards, and it was kind of interesting that ABC's Jimmy Kimmel, you know, here he is, this big star. Well, he decided he needed to call for an Uber ride to get to the event, and he found out that his Uber driver was a guy named Jeb Bush.
Hey, you're driving?
Yeah, I'm in between jobs right now. You know you can make $12 an hour driving for Uber?
I did not know that, but that's great. I have to get downtown to the Emmys.
Are you nominated?
I am, yeah.
Wow, what's that like?
It's nice. It's nice.
Do you think you can win?
Well, there's a lot of competition and probably not.
Well, here's what I know. If you run a positive campaign, the voters ultimately will make the right choice.
You know, it's funny you say that. My psychic...
Jimmy, that was a joke. Get out of the car.
Get out of the car. You gotta love it. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studios, my good friend Jason DeSanto, senior lecturer at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law. And, you know, Jason, this has just been such an unbelievable year that, you've got Jeb Bush, who at the very outset was like he was the front runner going in, and now he's driving for Uber.
Right, he's driving for Uber. And at the end of that segment, Rick, the best part to me was when he kind of made an exclamation with his arm and said, Jeb, exclamation point.
Yeah, except I didn't think that would come across on radio very well.
Yeah, but, no, that was a great bit.
Well, you know, what I appreciate about you is you understand political rhetoric. You understand what are kind of how key words, key phrases are. And maybe you can give us your idea of how you see this thing going. But before we get there, I want to ask you, what effect on a debate stage does it have for Jennifer Flowers to be sitting in the front row?
Well, we're in uncharted waters here.
That's what we have been for this entire campaign.
No, I saw that the Trump campaign has said that Jennifer Flowers will not be coming to the debate. That's what they've said. And so magnanimously, they've offered that.
Trump threatened to have her there, and she accepted.
That wasn't a threat. It was an invitation to a concerned citizen.
Well, that was after Mark Cuban had said he was going to be in the front row.
Yes, I know, yeah. And he's still planning to be there, I think, but maybe not in the front row.
Well, and my understanding is actually the Commission on Debates kind of weighed in here and said, okay, enough of this nonsense.
The gamesmanship.
And trying to get in somebody's head.
Which there's frequently a lot of in these things. You know, on the day of debates, it's been said before that at that point, maybe there's not a lot left to do. And so the two sides, the coaches for the two sides, start rifling through all the possibilities of what the other person might be plotting and kind of get themselves into a frenzy about it. It happened in 1992 when there was some concern. Actually, 1988 was one with George H.W. Bush, where they were concerned that Michael Dukakis was going to challenge Bush to a one-on-one debate and get rid of the reporters. Mm-hmm. And so the response that the H.W. Bush people had was, well, that's fine. We'll just have our guy come out from behind the podium and ask Dukakis to do the same. Because, of course, he was on a riser.
Right.
Right? So they had their own little counter demonstration planned. Shenanigans.
Well, since we are truly in uncharted waters in this whole campaign, are we in uncharted waters on what we should expect out of this debate?
It's going to be different. I think it'll be different. I heard you talking about the Cubs earlier. I think Jack Brickhouse would have called it a Pier 6 Donnybrook going way back. You have, in a way, you have a matchup here between madness and method.
Yes.
You have somebody who's really unpredictable and somebody who is known for her lawyerly approach. The question to me is whether they're going to stick to those tactics. And I suspect that they will because they are who they are. And over 90 minutes, debates tend to reveal who people are. And I think the contrast will be fascinating. I think they both have some challenges ahead of them in dealing with each other and particularly in building trust with the American people. And I think that's where the debate will be won or lost.
Well, and that's I'm glad you brought that up because I've mentioned this in the past. And of course, you know, as we saw in the primaries with the exit polling among Democratic voters about the trust factor with Clinton, as we've seen in general election polling and the unfavorable ratings that these two candidates have. And I go back to when Hillary Clinton was here to keynote an Operation Push luncheon where she acknowledged that she had work to do to earn the trust of voters. But just saying that doesn't mean it's going to happen.
No, but trust is multifaceted. You know better than anybody that most campaigns ultimately turn on trust. Voters, all of us, don't know everything about all the issues. When we tune into a debate, our impressions and whether or not we actually trust somebody are going to be formed and are going to have some impact. When you go into the voting booth and you have a 50-50 call, who do I really trust to do the job? That's really what it comes down to. And it's not simply about being honest and trustworthy. That's a major component of it. But trust really is comprised of two different strands when it comes to elections. And one is authority. Do we think that somebody's up to the job? Do we trust them to answer the phone at 3 a.m? And the other piece of it is the trust factor of, do I really like the person? And you can think about it.
Well,
like,
I think, that's the gut factor.
It's the gut factor. I mean, if you're going to buy a car from somebody, you don't have to like them, but it kind of helps if you do. If you're going to hire anybody, you don't have to love them every single day, but it sure helps if you like them a little bit. And this is something of a job interview. The president comes into our homes every day for the next 4 years or maybe 8 years, and that becomes important. And there are things in a debate that candidates can do to build those factors. Honest and trustworthy, not so much. But the other elements of trust, very much so.
The likability factor.
Likability and also the strength component. And for Trump, strangely, for somebody who has premised his campaign on strength, Clinton will do and has done a pretty decent job of distinguishing strength from brazenness,
mm-hmm.
two different things, and making strength about competence. And that's one of the battles that they'll be engaged in tomorrow night and through the next few weeks. But for Trump, in terms of the competence, if it becomes a test on competence, little things can go a long way. A little detail sprinkled in here and there.
Just
an
a little bit.
Yeah. Organizing an answer, even having two points.
Coherency?
To even say, you know, there are two responses to that or 2 points to that, it sounds trivial, but in the mind of a listener or a viewer, it begins to sound coherent. It coheres. And then, of course, that's just
kind of like the mayor doing his 1-2-3 routine.
Yeah, well, that's the mayor's been involved in messaging for a long time.
But I mean that's kind of the point you're trying to make, though, is that if you can kind of you can show different levels of knowledge,
and that even in that way, maybe it demonstrates some reflection and something methodical about your approach. Do I think Trump's going to do a lot of that? Not really. But that opportunity is there.
We're speaking with Jason DeSanto, senior lecturer at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Jason DeSanto, senior lecturer at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law. We're talking about debate rhetoric and whether it can sway the voters. You know, it's so fascinating. It's 83% of those polled in the CBS poll are going to be watching this debate. But yet, it looks like maybe this narrow sliver of like 8% of the voters are undecided in that very same poll that are going to be watching this debate. Does a debate convince anybody to switch their vote?
Well, so you do have that sliver that can be convinced.
Right,
that
the
convincible that you identified. But the other thing it might be able to do is to motivate those who are committed but not truly committed. And that's mm-hmm. a big issue for Clinton.
Correct.
Particularly where it relates to progressives, members of the Obama coalition, even people who were part of the Sanders coalition that she was having trouble reaching. As we talked a minute ago about the challenges Trump has, those are the challenges that she has. She communicates almost entirely logically. He communicates almost entirely emotionally. And so he needs to shore up some of the more logical aspects of his claims to get people to trust him more. She's just the opposite. She needs to be able to, as people say, connect better. And to me, what that really means is, to those that are part of the Obama group, she needs to inspire them more. And did that really one time, I think, really well in this campaign, and that was the night she won and gave a speech in New York. Those themes are the themes she needs to begin tying more of her answers to. Unity, progress, moving forward, inclusiveness, all the things that would contrast with Trump. Clinton is an exceptionally good tactical debater.
As we have seen, yes.
She always knows her points. She's very crisp with them. She handles the thrust and parry of a debate very well. But what she does not do as well is take those individual answers and funnel them up to one unified set of themes. What does a vote for Hillary Clinton mean? Those themes, unity, progress, those are the themes she needs to stick to and hit, and they tend to be a little bit more inspirational. That's what she has to do to motivate those folks. The people who are middle-class voters, others that she struggled with, those without college degrees, for example, in the most recent ABC Washington Post poll, that's much more about identifying viscerally with their economic anxiety. They don't really trust her on that issue very well. And so the ability to connect with those people emotionally is very important for her. So she has just the opposite issue for Trump. And so her answers have to emphasize both the broader themes, but also those middle class concerns, and really be able to speak in a way that sounds like she understands where they're coming from. And that doesn't mean telling a story about somebody who's here or anything like
that. The anecdotal.
Yeah, we don't need that.
But more of a, just more of a common parlance, I guess.
Conversational language. What you would say in another context, non-lawyerly language, and even allusions to what it means to come home at the end of the day and have a stack of bills, you know, which is not something people associate with Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Right. But having that top of mind and being able to express it is really important for that connection. And so that
is important for her. But that's been a problem. And you, yes, you emphasized what the debate could do.
Yep.
But when you look at her speeches, there's still that empathy factor that seems to be missing. And these are speaking to supporters, ostensibly.
Yeah.
So you've got a home crowd. But I think there's, and this goes back to when I covered her in 08, was that connect. It's a very difficult thing for her to do.
Well, let's talk about 08 for a minute. It's a great point because the moment at which she began to forge the best connections for her, the best emotional bonds with people, was in New Hampshire when she was really dissed by then-Senator Obama in the debate in New Hampshire when he said, "You're likable enough, Hillary." And it wasn't so much 2 days later when she cried, which she did, and that, to be sure, probably gained her a connection with people. It was actually the way she handled it in the debate. If you go back and look at it, she handled it with grace. She smiled and handled it almost in a so self-possessed way that it was inspiring the way that she dealt with that situation. And there was a lot that went into that. I mean, you're viewing it as somebody who really has just been put down on national television, but also as a female candidate for president and who handled it with equanimity. And that, to me, is very important when she's dealing with Trump. There really are kind of four levels of outrage that you could react to when it comes to Trump. And one is just to ignore him if he says something ridiculous. The second is to joke, and she's done that well throughout a series of debates and also in her speeches about him. The third is to shame him. And the fourth would be outrage. I would imagine that in practicing, there's sort of this gradation. I mean, if I were working with her, let's try all four of those.
Sure.
And I think she's a good enough performer on that stage to be able to calibrate what's necessary at any point in time. Humor is important. Firm with him, funny with us, about him. Basically separate us as an audience from him.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the tactic I would use. And then a healthy bit of shame, particularly when it comes to birtherism. That is something that I think is ripe for probing, because I think it'll drive him crazy.
And and also too, you know, where some of that lack of enthusiasm for her exists is with the African American community.
Yes.
And that's a perfect entree for her.
And for progressives and for suburbanites who don't want to feel like they are on the side of going backwards in terms of the progress and social progress of this country.
All good points, and all good things to watch and see how and if they get established by the candidates. Jason DeSanto, senior lecturer at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law. As always, Jason, great to have you here in studio.
Rick,
thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick. Love being here.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Dan McGrath, Brad Cole, and Jason DeSanto. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening on this beautiful Sunday morning. And it's time for the beautiful Dean Richards.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
Oh, I'm in that kind of mood.
You are. I've noticed Rick's a little giddy today.
Well, it's because I'm heading off
Is it pre-debate euphoria that you're feeling?
It's pre-Chicago gourmet. Euphoria.
Yes.
And that will put me into a nice food coma that I can sleep until the debate.
Sleep
on
through the
night.
Debate.
No, I'm not going to. That, I don't know that anybody could sleep through this debate.
I mean, plenty of people want to, but I agree with all your guests this morning that it's people are just, they're captivated. They want to see they want to see that Senator, you're no John Kennedy moment that might take place. I think it's the unexpected thing. That's why people are going to tune in.
It's a rhetorical NASCAR race.
It's true.
I think is maybe the maybe I.
How great would it be if they all came out with decals on their suits?
What?
Donald Trump with STP? What?
No. All of his decals would say Trump.
That's
true. Be the Trump
steaks,
true,
the wine,
the wine.
The steak,
yes.
Right.
And then you'd have Hillary with all the Wall Street, different sponsors. And, there you go.
It's going to be one like we've never seen before. That's for sure.
And maybe we'll never want to see again.